Hey, hey, Los Angeles. I am coming to do a live event in Santa Monica on April 24th in the evening. I'm so excited to get to hang out with you again. If you want to get your tickets, they are priced to sell out. You can go to markgroves.com/Los Angeles and go get them now. And I can't wait to see you there. We're going to hang out for an evening of intimate conversation, live coaching, all that jazz. Looking forward to it. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves podcast. I've been really waiting to have this gentleman back on the podcast. We always have such deep and prolific conversations. He's one of your favorite, that's for sure. And that's whether you've heard him on the podcast or not. I mean, he is one of the most successful and famous thinkers of our time. He's one of the most celebrated authors, and that is Diego Perez, who's also known as Young Pueblo. And we dive deep into how the journey into the mind impacts relationships. We dive deep into creating depth in relationship, navigating difference. What's the key to really cultivating deeply connective relationships and how that's correlated to the relationship to self? So before we get started, make sure wherever you're listening to this podcast that you hit the subscribe button so you do not miss any episodes. And it's also a free way that you can help support the show. All right, let's go. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mark Groves podcast. Today I have returning guest, writer, speaker, all the things, Diego Perez, also known as Young Pueblo. Welcome.
Thank you, my brother. I'm always so grateful that you make space for us to have these chats. I feel like we've evolved together so much over the years, and I'm always, you know, with deep gratitude that I get to come back, because I hear often the most feedback about the conversations that you and I have together, that people really get a lot from them. So always happy to rap with you.
Yeah, I'm so happy to have you back on. And our previous ones have been around, you know, mindfulness, presence, self, all of the paths of your books and and your writing and your world. And I was so excited that you went into a subject that I've always known you have a deep level of reverence, expertise, a beautiful philosophies, and that's on the subject of relationships. So for all of you listening or watching, Diego has a new book called How to Love Better, The Path to Deeper Connection Through Growth, Kindness, and Compassion. And I mean, you're speaking near and dear to my heart with this one.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is your field. But this one was really coming from, honestly, the shock of, you know, I went into meditating because I honestly had to save myself. I had to rebuild my mind from the ground up. I had to figure out how to deal with the past heaviness that was clogging up my perception, the anxiety, the sadness. So I go into meditating and I'm trying to help myself. And I'm over time building these skills of patience, understanding, listening to myself, accepting myself. But what I didn't realize was that immediately that had an effect on my relationship. Immediately, those same skills would show up in a really positive manner during the good times and the hard times in the relationship that I have with my wife. So it was a bit of a surprise, because I didn't go into meditating to like help my relationship. I went into it to help myself. And one of the results is like, yeah, I have a better relationship with myself, but it's opened up a new chapter of harmony with my wife. So I'm profoundly grateful to that. And I think people are doing it, whether in meditating or not, you know, whether through coaching or therapy. But if you really take time to develop yourself as an individual, you will feel that in your relationship.
Yeah, you cannot, you know, all the things that come up, of course, from relationship that likely make us want to have to meditate so that we could find some sort of reflection. But we don't often take the time or make the time to actually sit down and reflect on the frictions of our relationships. And maybe we go through a breakup and that causes us to go deeply into the self. But you're right, you know, the more you find ease within you, how could that not reflect back? How long did you find was the feedback loop? Like that you went through this recognition of self and then it started to present with your wife?
I think it was pretty immediate to see, you know, small percentages of changes. Like I remember after the first 10-day course, I felt like I had to more so vocalize how I felt about her, not just keep it to myself, to talk more about, you know, like how can we better support each other and just to like show up with even more kindness than before, because we had already been together for about 6 years. And you know how relationships go, where like you're together for a long time and you can get so into the mode of the mundaneness of the relationship that you forget to, you know, have that gratitude of like, man, this person really wants to spend their life with me and like cultivate a culture together. And that's really special. And but the big changes really came over time. I think after we started doing, you know, like, because we had both sat multiple 10-day courses, 20 days, 30 days, 45 days of silent retreats. And I think after we started doing the longer ones is when we saw the biggest changes, where it was like, you know, we started really seeing that whenever we would feel tension in our minds as individuals, the mind would immediately try to figure out, how can I blame this on you? How can I not take responsibility over the tension in my mind and figure out a way that, you know, that it's really just your fault and never my fault in any way? And we were both doing that to each other, and it was so unconscious. But as we started developing self-awareness as individuals, it was like, oh, wait, this isn't really about you. You know, sometimes it's granted, we do have to apologize and we make mistakes, but a lot of times you just carry tension inside of you, and then that tension tries to multiply itself, and then it's most easy to point that tension towards whomever you're in proximity towards, and that's usually your partner.
Yeah, they usually get that. They're the place we feel maybe safe enough to spill that tension out. But you know, it's like I heard. Do you know who John Delaney is? He's like he's a therapist who answers. He has like a radio show where he answers questions, and he's on. He has a social media presence. He's great though. He's like tatted up, gives straight talk. He's a good dude. And a guy sharing with him, you know, I'm trying to heal and work things out with my wife. She had a 3-month affair with her boss. And John, you know, compassionately was like, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And he said, let's just start with, you can only work on your part. And I was like, oh, that's so great that he started with that, of like this level, like you can want to work it out, but they might not want to, you know, and this is true of any aspect of relationship. It's like, how do you go so deep within yourself, take 100% responsibility for everything, including every feeling you have, and start to, and maybe, you know, this is the question I have for you. Do you see the process of that diving into the meditation and into the self-reflection as being the ability to separate self from other?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a big part of it. And I would even go a little further in recognizing that being attached to your sense of self makes the relationship harder, because you're basically demanding a static version of who you are and who your partner is. And long-term relationships especially really demand that you work with the universe as opposed to against it, where you're deeply embracing the truth of change. And, you know, this whole universe that we live in, it's changing at every level of existence, right? Atomic, biological, cosmological, everything's changing. And when you're attached to who a person is, how they are, how you first met them, you're basically craving for things to exist in a very particular way. But in reality, all you can do is just flow forward. And what does that mean? That means that you're going to change and your partner's going to change. And even though you two may be highly committed to each other, you have no control over what their hobbies are going to be, what their interests are going to be, what, you know, how they like to show up in life. And I think that calls for having a deep sense of acceptance and also approaching your partner with curiosity, because you're always going to have to get to know them again and again and again.
Yeah, that never ends. And isn't it? You said something previously about recognizing that you needed to express more gratitude and tell your wife how you feel. And I find a lot of what I encounter in long-term relationship challenges, not just within the people I work with or know, but also within myself, is that we forget, maybe just by the busyness of life, but we forget that to be in a relationship in each and every moment is a choice. And that means your partner could choose not to be. And I think we take commitment for granted in a lot of ways. What do you think?
I think so too. I think, and commitment happens over and over and over again. It's something that, like, you know, ideally you want to be together forevermore, but you don't really have that much control over every little thing that happens. And that's why a lot of times, like, relationships are about acceptance and forgiveness, because you're going to make mistakes. And then mistakes are happening, you know, apologies are there. You recognize, you try to change the behavior so that mistakes don't happen again. But relationships are never going to be exactly perfect. And we have to, I think, just understand that relationships always have an ending. Either a breakup happens or death happens. And I think what is inspiring about that, instead of scary, is that it just helps you be much more present with the relationship that you have in front of you.
Yeah, it's so true that when you recognize that it's going to end, it does, mm-hmm. which is true of life. I find that the same resistance, yeah, to
Mark, we hate that truth, Mark. It's yeah. like that truth that change is going to eventually wipe the slate, like, that hurts us so much because it includes our own existence. And I think instead of having a combative relationship with change, we need to accept that it's bound to happen and let it inspire us to be present.
It's such a good shift. You know, it's like when someone embraces their death, they truly live. Have you ever heard that African proverb that I hope, when death finds you, may it find you alive?
Oh, that's sick. I haven't heard that. That's really beautiful.
So good.
Yeah.
What really inspired you to write this book? Like, you've always written about relationship on some level, yeah, but I really love that you were like, no, I'm going all in, explicit. This is it. We're going how to love better.
Yeah, I think it was a mixture of the, you know, initial story that I told you. Like, I saw the changes right off the bat. When I started meditating, it immediately started affecting how I showed up in the relationship, but I waited. I waited intentionally because I knew it felt right to write little poems about relationships or short little essays, but I knew that I needed time as a writer to just cultivate how I'm communicating, to learn how to really shape chapters well, to learn how to write nonfiction. And the other end of that was that I felt like when I saw that bridge happen between personal growth and relationships, all of that was happening in my own direct experience, but I was still too new to it. So it just needed time. I felt like I needed time to, you know, just focus on my relationship with my wife and start, I don't know, the almost evolution of the culture that we were creating between the two of us. And it was really by trial and error that, you know, all of these chapters came about in the book. And I think the combination of time, the combination of just growing as a writer and just putting more hours of meditating in to really make sure that the things that I think are true, you know, have some tested value.
Why did you start to, or when did you start to reference the thing that you're co-creating with your wife as a culture?
I feel like, you know, it started, I think, within the last year, but I feel like we slip into our own world. Like, we're always just like, we're like in this own little world together. And, you know, not only is she my wife, but she's my best friend. And she's also one of the best thinkers that I know. So I really trust her view on things. And it honestly feels like a little microcosm that we live in, where we literally design the culture. And I think part of that culture is, you know, that's where when we started practicing, you know, preventive communication, where we're just like without you even asking me, I'll tell you how I feel. And she does the same thing. Or when we're having arguments, you know, we don't care about winning anymore. No one's trying to win. It's just like, I realize that part of the argument is happening because I don't understand you in this moment. So let me instead try to understand, because we've learned from time and time again that trying to win just honestly pisses both of us off. Like, everybody loses right. when one person's trying to win.
Yeah, just the very act of the other person trying to win, you're like, no, you're not. Yeah. Why are you trying to win? Why is this winning?
Yeah, I know. And there's resentment builds up, and it's just like, it's just not productive.
If you're ready to invest in and level up your health and well-being, listen up. The Institute of Integrative Nutrition is the world's most respected nutrition and health coaching school, with the largest global presence in health coaching. Their online health coach training program and additional courses provide their students and graduates with the tools and knowledge they need to transform their own personal health, as well as the health of their clients and communities around the world. Not only am I a faculty member of the Health Coach Training Program, teaching on the subject of relationships and shadow work, but I personally know numerous people who've taken IIN's program and have become some of the best health coaches I know. What makes IIN different is that their courses offer a holistic approach to health that considers all aspects of an individual, from your physical health, nutrition, and environment, to your mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being. When you enroll in their courses, you'll learn the tools and techniques that allow you to embrace coaching as a lifestyle. You are your client first, and create the foundation for personal and professional transformation. What's really exciting is that IIN recently partnered with Chopra Global, the company founded in Deepak Chopra's vision, which means all Chopra courses are now available through IIN, expanding their health, wellness, and coaching course offerings to include meditation, Ayurveda, and yoga, as well as Chopra's coaching certification. If this sounds interesting to you, you can save 20% off site-wide. That's 20% off all the courses from IIN and Chopra when you visit bit.ly/markiin and use the code markgroves20 at checkout. That's bit.ly/markiin and use the code mark20 for 20% off site-wide. What aspects do you think of the book are like the learnings basically are written by your wife through you?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think there was a moment that really crystallized that we were both practicing. And I tell the story in the book, but there was a clear moment where she was, I think, at this desk that I'm at right now, and I was in the kitchen working on my laptop. And she was over here for, I think, you know, for like 2 or 3 hours. We were both just working separately on our own things. And she came into the room and she came in laughing. And she wanted to let me know. She was like, I just spent the last few hours trying to figure out how this tension in my mind is your fault. And she was like, and I found my mind going further and further back in time to try to pick something up, dust it off, and get angry about it. And she was like, but it had nothing to do with you. And I was like, oh shit. Like, I do the same thing all the time. But she, you know, in that moment, she crystallized it so well. And from that moment was when we started realizing the connection between how illogical the mind can be and how that can be offset by just clear communication. Because when I own up the fact that I'm feeling tense, it takes that cannon fodder away from the mind where it's like, you already know you don't feel good. So why are you going to add to that? And the other person also knows, you know, to give you space or give you support or whatever it is that you need in that moment. But I would say, honestly, this, like, in the family, I'm the writer, right? I'm sort of putting the words together. But how to love better? I mean, that's one of the reasons why at the end of the audiobook, you know, my wife likes to, she doesn't want to keep a large Instagram account. She doesn't want any of that stuff, right? She doesn't care about that stuff. But we decided that we should have a conversation between the two of us. So my wife and I, in the audiobook, we have a conversation at the end. And then I get to ask her questions like, what did you learn from meditating? Because she's meditated just as much as I have. She's also put in like 13,000 hours of meditating, and ask her about more stories in the relationship and all that stuff, because this is the culture that we created together, and we're sharing it.
That's so cool. I love what you did with your book. My wife and I had conversations in our book after each chapter, because we were like,
oh, nice.
Yeah, I just felt like it's so much different for someone to have a window into, especially for you, because you're the outward facing part of, you're translating all of the, you're alchemizing all the things into words that you and your wife are working on individually and together.
Yeah.
And then for people to hear from your wife is so powerful. They must be like, I can't wait to get the audiobook. That's how I crush books anyway. So to know that personal touch is there is, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's
how
does
she
really
feel
great.
Being invited into that process?
Well, she is very hesitant. You know, she's like, I mean, your wife is like a public figure. You know, she's out there and people know of her. And, but my wife, she's always been one who just doesn't need that. She doesn't like, she's not interested. That's not like where her interest lies. But what's funny though, is that she has always been my primary and first editor, because she's super smart. She, you know, well-educated. She used to work as a scientist, now works as my manager. And so whenever I write something for Substack or an article, she reads it first, and then she goes over it. And then she not only checks if there's, like, you know, simple little grammar problems, but also checks the logic of what I'm talking about. Mm. And I trust her wisdom. So if she says something's missing, whether I like it or not, I have to take it seriously. And I have to, you know, when we figure out together what's missing, what to add to sort of sharpen the view. So in a lot of ways, she has a massive, massive impact on how I'm showing up in my writing.
That's amazing. My wife is similar in that I'll, like, share the things, especially if I'm writing something that feels I'm very impassioned by.
Yeah.
Because she is much more of a reference point of, like, inserting more empathy into my writing or inserting more understanding.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, you know, whether you like it or not, I think that ability to bring something that's so important to us, to the writer or to the person expressing, and then sort of lay it at the altar of relationship and receive the necessary truth to make it better. Isn't that, like, the metaphor of everything that you're writing about, you know?
Yeah. And it requires, like, you know, cultivating a healthy detachment from your view, because, like, my perspective is not ultimate. Like, I don't know everything. Mm-hmm. And together we do know more. Like, I find that our relationship outside of work, you know, it was so funny how, as we started maturing as individuals and putting in our self-growth, we started developing harmony in our relationship more so than before. But then life just became problem solving after that, because family members would have issues, you know, someone would get sick, someone would have some type of trouble. And these are, like, things that really affect us, and we have to actively problem solve. And I'm grateful that we are, you know, that there's two of us as a team coming together to, like, look at these problems and, you know, hopefully provide better solutions.
What do you think is the most profound thing that people can do to begin to start to love better?
They need to stop avoiding their own emotions. I think that's just fundamental. Is the relationship that you have with your own emotions is going to show up in how you hold space for the emotions of your partner. And when you have the resilience to be able to feel your own sadness, to be able to feel the weight of your emotions and not run away from that, and notice that they're also temporary, that helps you just have more resilience during the down moments.
Yeah, it feels like for so many of us, we're not modeled that, for example. Mm-hmm. But even society does not train us for this. You know, we, like, know the Pythagorean theorem, but we don't know emotional processing or the value of anger or what it might be.
Yeah. And I think honestly, it's because civilization has gotten to a point where we're not just, like, fighting to survive. So that's why it's opened up this whole sort of emotional scape, like, oh, wow, I can actually be happy. Like, there's a potential for happiness, or there's a potential to, like, not just carry the weight of past hurt over and over again. Because I remember, even from when I grew up, I remember, you know, growing up in the 90s, and during that time, it felt like whether if you had some physical ailment or some mental ailment, you were going to have that for the rest of your life. Like, healing wasn't really an option. And now it feels like things are really different, because this I feel like in a lot of ways, this wellness and self-love movement, personal growth movement, has started shining a light, not just on what's happening inside of us, but then that's helped shine a light on how we can improve relationships. Because think about it, like, even like you and I, like, we both came about at the same time. Like, when we started sharing on Instagram and you started your podcast, like, you know, that whole self-love and how does that look like in relationships, it's all, like, they go hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't have one without the other. It's like your relationship. What's that saying that you can only go as deep with another as you've gone with yourself. Yeah. And I was, you know, that other thought too, that when someone shows up and tells you that they love you, but you don't love yourself, you'll wonder what's wrong with them, or you won't believe them. And so even if you lose them in that experience because you can't receive their love, you now have to go, well, you don't have to, but you should go deep into the self to explore where are those parts of us. And, like, what do you think when someone says, like, I started to do the work, I went deep into a self-reflection. I went into the personal growth thing, and then I got back into a relationship, and then I got triggered, and like, it's all useless, or, you know, that kind of thing.
I think that we, without knowing, unconsciously, we think that like personal growth and relationships have that same quality as the apps on our phone, where all the apps on our phone are set up to just make everything easier and faster and to just basically make life as blissful as possible. But that's not how personal growth and relationships work. They are slow and hard. Like, when you want to improve the harmony in your mind, when you want to improve the harmony in your relationship, that's going to require a lot of repetition, because the patterns in your mind, they formed through repetition, through unconscious repetition of reaction. So to be able to build your mind and design it in new ways, that's going to require a lot of repetition. Like, the example I have is when I first got into my relationship with my wife, it became clear to me that I wasn't very good at listening. So this was, you know, very pre-meditation. Like, I had to train myself to learn how to listen better, to literally like notice when my attention was moving away from her words and bring it back to her words. And that required, honestly, like a lot of intentional training. And I think that pains people, because when they put time into their personal growth and then they have some quiet attachment to perfection over themselves, where it's like, oh, I put that time in, so I shouldn't get angry ever again, or I shouldn't make bad decisions ever again. That's totally untrue. Like, life is going to be a series of ups and downs, and it's just impossible to get it right every time. But how do you handle things when you get it wrong?
Yeah, it's almost like exactly the purpose of the meditation and the process is so that, because you're already still connected to outcomes and needing to be a certain way. And if you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I want to build those skills, I want to learn how to create epic love, I want to heal from a breakup, I want to heal my nervous system as I'm in the dating process so I can choose the most aligned partner to create a future with, well, I have the perfect opportunity for you. Because you're listening to the Create the Love podcast, you get to bypass the waiting list for the Create the Love community. You can go to createthelove.com/yes and get started with whichever course is most applicable to your life and the skill set you want to develop. And here's one thing I know for certain, is that great love can't wait. You have to get started right away. Your healing can't wait. So go register now at createthelove.com/yes and get started right away. When you tell people that you've done 10-day Vipassanas, but then you've done 30, 45, what's the longest you've done?
45 is the longest one.
Yeah. When you come out of that, are you just like fucking Yoda? Like, are you just like, when you walk down the street, are people just like, oh,
they have no idea. When I do come out of it, it's this funny thing where I'm moving at a very different speed than everybody else. Like, I'm moving a lot slower than everyone.
Yeah.
And I'll have to like intentionally speed up. And it usually takes like 3 days for me to like, you know, I'm not like walking slower, but I'm just like, when I look at a person, I'm really looking at them. Like, when I'm hearing someone, I'm really hearing them. And it takes time to like go back to everyone's speed. But the other sort of interesting thing after, you know, we come out of those retreats, my wife and I learned this together, like, where we'll go to these retreats and we'll be in totally separate rooms. We won't see each other for the whole 45-day course. So we only talk at the very end of it, because it's a silent retreat, and it's silent for, let's say, the 43 days of the 45. So on day 44 and 45, we start talking again. And that's when I can see her again. And we notice immediately right off the bat that who we were before is long gone.
Wow.
So we're talking like so much conditioning has been deleted, and we are simultaneously getting to know ourselves as individuals and getting to know each other. So when we come back home after the course is over, I remember multiple times now where I go and get on the treadmill to go run, and I put headphones in, and I listen to the old playlist, whatever I was listening to right before I went to the retreat, and I can't even listen to it, man. It's just like, I listen to the music and I'm like, this isn't even me anymore. Like, I can't even, like, it doesn't reflect how I want to feel. And that goes down to like not just music, but the TV shows we want to watch, the things we want to talk about, like the how we want to spend our time. So in a lot of ways, like the old preferences that we had before are absolutely renewed. And we have this honestly really fun period where it's like, I'm getting to know myself and I'm also getting to know you again. Like, how do you want to use your time? Like, what's fun? And there was a cool shift between the last 45-day course and now. Now, one of the funnest things my wife and I do is like, we go on these long walks. Like, that was never our thing before. We never used to go on long walks. And now we like can't wait for it because it just feels super fun.
I never thought of that time of 45 days being in the renewal that or coming back together, that you're like, a lot of shit's happened in 45 days, even though you haven't done a, like, there's not the doing part of it. Mm-hmm. There's just like, you've gone through so many layers of yourself. And we take that again so much for granted when we're in someone's life every day for 45 days. We think we already know what's transpired. We think, you know, as you said about the stagnant self, like we hold ourselves to a static self and we hold someone else to a static self. Like, you're not the person you were when I met you. And it's like, of course not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's really interesting.
And it's really sped up too. It's almost like before you go to one of those long courses, it's like you're turned into a football and then you just get launched downfield, you know, like a Hail Mary pass into the new version of yourself. And you come out and it's like, it just feels really new. And I remember I had this experience where at the end of the last 45-day course, I had totally forgot, you know, I finished the course and the first thing I get calls from my speaking agent because he's like, you know, we've lined this thing up. And I'm having to say yes and no to, you know, different options I have. And I end up 3 days after the 45-day retreat is over, I end up going to South by Southwest to speak at the end of a conference. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, when my wife and I, we finish the retreat, 3 days pass, we get to Austin. And then like, I had forgot, man, like I knew in the back of my mind that Young Pueblo was a thing and everything like that. But like after so much time, it just falls so far to the wayside. And then all of a sudden people are like, you know, taking pictures of us. There's a photo shoot right before I go on the talk. People are miking me up. And I'm standing there looking at my wife. I'm like, I forgot about all this stuff. Like, this is crazy. Like, what are people so doing wild right now? And then they just kind of whisk me on stage. And all of a sudden I'm in front of 4,000 people. And I'm like, the first thing I tell them, I'm like, bear with me because I haven't talked in 45 days. You know, I haven't. And then I start speaking. And at the end of it, both my wife and I felt like that was one of the best ones I've ever done because it was just like raw flow state, you know, like I just swam right into it. And, you know, whenever I go on stage, I usually feel some degree of anxiety, of course, right? Totally natural. But during that retreat, I had dealt with so much fear, like a lot of fear was coming up and it was just hardened conditioning from the past. And because I was able to be with that fear, observe that fear and not fight it, a lot of it melted away. And we forget the relationship between fear and anxiety. So when I got on stage, the amount of anxiety I felt was so much smaller. And I was like, dang, this is very different. So it was, you know, getting to know myself again for sure.
Do you find that there's a correlation to the relationship that you're cultivating with yourself, your wife, but also the relationship you have with Young Pueblo?
Yeah, I think so. I think over time, we're both learning that it's just very, it's impermanent. Like we both look at it as a project. Like we, you know, I enjoy writing. I find it to be very fun to like, to reflect on what I'm learning and put it into articles and in ways that people find useful. But it's also like a part that exists for now. And there's also other things that I find fun, you know, like the things we talk about, you know, off the podcast, like, you know, building companies, like, you know, finding different ways to help people. Just there are so many sides to ourselves. So I feel like I enjoy writing as Young Pueblo now, and I'll probably write a few more books too. But I don't know what the future holds because I'm always like, I'm not trying to make the future be static. Like it's totally open.
Yeah, it's almost like the same impermanence that has to live with everything has to live with Young Pueblo because it's there anyways.
Totally.
Yeah. It's fascinating that you're like, we have, you know, that you forget that that's a thing, for example. And then when you re-enter the world that has been built around
Bro, it was wild. Yeah. Man. It was wild because I get out, you know, we literally get home. First person who calls me is the speaking agent. And he's like, Diego, how did the retreat go? I'm like, it was so amazing. And he's like, okay. He's like, you got to decide this, that, that. And he's moving at a way faster speed than I am. And I'm just like, whoa, like this is, it was almost making me laugh. It's like, we're living in two different worlds. And just the whole experience of getting mic'd up and like making eye contact with my wife, and she's laughing and I'm laughing, and I'm like, this is weird, but whatever, let's go for it.
Yeah, it's interesting to think of how the speed of commerce or the speed of the world moves so quickly, but it feels like it's moved so much more quickly due to technology, because we could do things more quickly. You know, we can send a message instead of by carrier pigeon or by mail that went by boat. And now it's like, literally, I could text you across, you're in the, across the North America from me. I could text you, and within that fraction of a second, you get that. And I think when you're going on these 10-day, 15-day Vipassanas, and I'm really thinking like, okay, well, if we were to take that sort of macro version of a meditation and then look at something for people who have never meditated, not that that couldn't be a good trial by fire, but how do you find meditation facilitates you to be able to separate from the absolute frenetic speed that the world moves at?
I think the speed of society, the current speed and what we're growing into, I think it has the potential for great sickness. It is so intense how fast, like, I think, you know, our initial motivation was to be more connected to each other. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so happy that I can text you and you're like, you know, thousands of miles away. But now that means that like the email's always full. There's always like more and more things you can do. And like so many people that you can text and stay connected with. But we forget that like we were hunter gatherers, and that, you know, studies have been done where I think it's about, you can only really have like about max 140 real connections. And I think it's 140, 150.
Yeah, and I forget what that number is called. Dunbar's number?
Something like that. I forget. Like, but that. Yeah. I was talking about it with Mindy Peltz. And like, so we have a set number of connections that we can actually have. But now we actually can maintain friendships from every era of our life and not let any go, because we're connected to each other on social media through our cell phones. So it's hard to like maintain genuine connections. And then you add work to that and the speed of work. And then you throw AI into that. And it's like, there's just way too much happening, and it's all happening so fast. Even like the news cycle these days, the news cycle is moving so ridiculously fast that it's like, you can barely comprehend, or you can barely even have a moment to care about what happened yesterday because something else happened today. And it's very frenzied. So what meditation has given back to me is like, I'm ruthlessly slow moving. Like if I don't force myself to make decisions quickly just because other people want me to make decisions quickly. Like, I think I'm trying my best. I do like being very productive, but especially when it comes to big things, if I need to take my time to really think about something, I take it, because I don't want to like be, you know, forced into decisions just because of speed.
Do you think it's even an optional skill anymore, like meditation and self-awareness in the technological world that look, technology is only going to get faster, and we're only going to get more technology masquerading as or being sold to us as connection.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's really interesting that the same time that technology gets faster and faster, things like therapy and meditation are also rising, because we need these internal tools to be able to cultivate ourselves, stabilize ourselves while the world is moving so fast. And even when you look at sort of, you know, people who've ran really big companies, like a lot of them meditate. Like, we, you know, if you, I've heard that Dario from Anthropic is, you know, a big like Dharma guy. Same thing with Sam Altman. Like, he meditates too. You know, you look at different people who are doing these huge things, like they're actively trying to stabilize their mind, ground their minds, build more awareness and more presence, because it feels almost impossible to do without taking care of yourself.
Yeah. I don't even know that, like, for most people who haven't even been introduced to meditation, and for you listening or watching, you know, of course, yeah, it's probably been something that's been dropped on your radar. You do casually every once in a while, but it's like, how, you know, as relationship, in my opinion, has become more important than ever. And the The ability to create thriving relationships has never been more accessible. And there's a, I forget his name, but there's a researcher and writer out of, I think he had an article in a book called The All or Nothing Marriage. But the whole idea, I wish I could remember his name, is that relationships have never been better than they ever have. There's just fewer of them, you know?
Wow. And
I think that's really true. Like the amount of people that actually desire depth and connection and shared values and vision has never been greater. Like,
yeah,
you know, and you hear someone say like, now that I've raised my standard, you know, there's less people who match. And I'm like, that's a good thing. That's actually a sign that you you have a standard. Now it's not just everyone on Tinder is your person. It's like, there's actually a, you're being focused on what you actually want to create. And so to me, I don't know that the nervous system, which is like the physiological thing we can't separate from, you know, the our biological reality, I think it actually necessitates meditation, because otherwise we'll be in a constant state of, you know, dopamine rushes and high cortisol states. And at least the meditation allows you to create a break between the stimulus and who you are, you know?
Yeah, I think the overwhelm by everything happening will just like honestly push a lot of people to disconnection.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, it's just too much. It's too much. And I think only because I've given myself time to like, you know, literally sort of design my life around making these retreats very important, because I needed the help. I needed to help myself. But then as I started developing the practice, I saw that this was a way better investment than even the S&P 500. Like, it's like you invest in this and the compounding results are massive. You know, you make better decisions in your work. You make better decisions in your relationship. You're able to connect with people more and life itself becomes much more enjoyable. So it's like, how am I going to take that away from myself? I have to keep running this experiment and putting energy into cultivating my mind, because the world is hard enough as it is. And I feel like I finally found something for me, you know, that works for me, that can make things a little smoother, because life isn't going to stop being challenging. And, but now I feel like when the challenge does come up, I'm more emotionally well equipped to deal with it.
What's it like to be handed an iPhone after?
Oh my gosh, bro. It is when I get to hand my iPhone away and they lock it up, it is one of the best feelings in the world. I like give you, I'm like, please take this thing. Like, please take it. And they, you know, lock it up and I don't get to see it. I don't have to like, I don't have anything in my pockets, you know, to just be like mobile like that. And when they hand it back to you, so there's this thing that happens where everything, when you have no sort of external stimulus, you know, you're not watching TV, you're not talking to other people, your senses become very heightened, where your hearing almost feels like it's a little stronger. When you look at trees, you can see more of the branches and leaves. And even when I look down and I look at, you know, I'm walking on the walking path and I can see all the rocks on the floor, it's like I can see more rocks than normal. So it's because the senses are very sharpened. You know, it's almost like you're back at a natural state. And then when they give you your iPhone, it looks so intense. Like it, like visually, you know, the electronics, the vibrancy of the colors, like I look at it, it looks so unnatural. And I've noticed that over time, very quickly, I would say within 4 or 5 days, my senses get dulled directly by the iPhone. So like, I can't quite see the vibrancy of everything because the colors of it just kind of suck the life out of what's natural. And does that make sense? It's like a weird thing to describe. I haven't described it before, but it really feels like after just a few days with the phone, life itself looks a little less brighter. And as soon as I put the phone away, life becomes bright again.
Yeah, I think we all feel that. Yeah. But you have, and I've had it, the ability to separate ourselves again, distance ourselves from that stimulus. And then what happens is we end up having to be with all the things that we're distracting from. You know,
yeah.
So all the feelings, all the, yeah.
It gives you a very different relationship with the likes, you know, like how many likes your posts get and all that stuff. I remember coming back to the phone and like over time, as I kept meditating, I'm like, oh, I don't really care if this post does well or not. You know, it's like, it's fine. And you start remembering that one post has not made or broken your career. it's literally been built out of a long series of consistency and, you know, you bringing value to people. And it's really helped me have a way better relationship with what does well and what doesn't do well.
With your wife and you, when you come back and there's phones in your life, then are you like, how do you manage that in your relationship?
I think we both we don't enjoy it, you know, because we know how enticing it is to scroll. And when, I don't know, there's some comfort to scrolling next to each other, but also like, we're also disconnected. And I think ideally I'd rather be reading a book or, you know, going for a walk or doing something like that. But I think we try to balance it out. We don't punish ourselves. I mean, a lot of my job is in my phone.
Right. Yeah.
So that's Same. The reality of it is I have to look at what's happening. And I think we do our best, but we're fortunate that we do have spaces in our life where at least once a year, you know, for 30 or 45 days or 20 days, I won't have my phone at all. And I'll just be meditating and just focus instead of doing, I'll just be focused on being.
It's powerful to be able to create that, but not many people actually even take the time to curate a small space. So what do you think is the first step from like a meditative perspective, or even in, you know, the concept of how to love better? How do we, what would be like a practical way in which we could begin to create that level of distance from ourselves, which also deepens our relationship to ourselves?
Yeah, I think it's important, like especially if you want a, you know, want to have more genuine interactions with your partner, I think it's really important to double down on communication. And this sounds like very basic, right? But I think having these moments, because my wife and I, we do this basically like twice a day where we tell each other, you know, we have these emotional temperature check-ins where we tell each other where we are in our sort of emotional spectrum, you know, whether it's you're feeling sad or you're feeling heavy or you're feeling tired or, you know, whether you're feeling something physical or mental, whatever it is, checking in like that creates this light moment of connection where we're so much more better informed about where the other person is. And I think being able to have these tiny moments of communication, because they're quite like, they're almost like passive, like we're not like sitting down to have a check-in. It's just like, I'm just voicing how I feel. She voices how she feels. And I think this like constant culture of honesty where I'm not going to hide that I don't feel good. And I'm just going to be open about it. And we both know that it'll pass. I think over time helps support greater and greater honesty. And I think even like, you know, last night we're having like, you know, a much more serious conversation about family issues that are happening. And it just like allowed for that presence there because we have so many moments of just doubling down on honesty, because we got to understand that dishonesty, it creates distance. But when you feed honesty into the relationship, that's ultimately what enhances the connection.
Yeah, it's a strange paradox that the truth is actually love.
Yeah, totally. Really well said.
For a lot of us, that's such a contradictory lived experience, or we get punished for sharing the truth, or we get shamed, or our whole family system oscillates around not talking about the thing. Even our culture, you know, it's like, it's so interesting how the people who are supposed to be presenting as adults are the ones who are not modeling this behavior. And we could sit all day and point so many fingers, or we could say, you know what, that's not for me and that's not what I want. And to start to create a relationship from a place of honesty can feel really destabilizing to our system, because we think, well, if I'm going to be honest, what happens if that destroys my relationship? And yet, would we not want to invite a relationship to dismantle if it can't hold truth? Like, what do you think about that?
I think that whether people like it or not, love is a risk. And you have to put yourself out there for the opportunity for connection. And that means that there are times where we have to deliver hard truths, you know, either mistakes that we've made in the past that we've hidden, or, you know, things that we've just been sort of skipping over and not really having a hard conversation about. But I think having those moments, it is scary because it has the potential to break the relationship. But also, do you want to live a lie? Like, are you really having a relationship if you're hiding so much? And instead, when you do offer the truth, then there is the opportunity for repair, the opportunity for forgiveness, and the opportunity to build better culture. So I think these things are, you know, really, really valuable to just keep moving forward with honesty, because I don't know, dude, you don't want to just like have this sort of superficial relationship with a person that you really care about.
And we've not really had, you mentioned earlier that, you know, we're in a time where we have more perceived capacity to hold conversations about self-awareness and love.
Right, because we're eating and we have houses and, right, you know, there isn't a war happening right in front of us. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's interesting how like philosophy was born from, you know, some perception of wealth, you know, that all of a sudden, instead of like trying to go forage, someone else was foraging, whether they were paid or not, whole other conversation. But it's like, now I'm sitting around eating berries and I'm able to think about thinking, you know.
Yeah.
And I was having a conversation with my wife about, you know, like patriarchy, et cetera. And I said to her, you know, in what way is the evolution of relationship much like, you know, is it a, I think it's a praying mantis that once it has sex, the female like tears the head off the male or something. Like it's something savage. I think it's the praying mantis. Yeah. But I said to her, like, at some point, if that praying mantis starts to develop empathy and recognize its natural evolutionary instinctual tendencies, it's going to look back at history and see that for generations they've been tearing heads off the dudes after they hook up.
Yeah.
And I said, so like, I think there's part of what we're waking up to about the way we relate to each other and power dynamics and all that kind of stuff has been just like how, like, I really do believe, and this is not negating the pain and suffering that's been at the hands of that. I'm just talking about it from an evolutionary perspective. It's like, I really do believe that the universe is always trying to make everything better. And that is true of everything in nature. So we are nature. So how could it not be true with us? And so now you can have access, no matter, even if you're in some form of survival state, there is now an ability to say like, okay, I'm going to take 15 seconds. I'm going to learn even about the value of breath. I'm going to learn how to regulate my nervous system. Who even knew that you could do like breath patterns and stimulate your vagal nerve, right? Like,
yeah.
To me, that even if you're in a survival state, the way to get out of that state is obviously activation to get mobility, and is also to get into a regulated state so you could be creative and use your prefrontal cortex. And so when I hear what you're saying about relationship, to me, I'm like, you've got some people waking up in relationship that was created at a lower level of awareness, not lower being hierarchical, but just like not aware about why we choose who we choose. And so they wake up and then they're like, shit, I'm like 45. I said yes to this when I was 22 and I'm way different. Hey, we're different. This isn't working the way it is. And the other person's like, wait, what? It's almost like the praying mantis being like, hey, you just ate Henry's head. Like, we should probably start to think about eating, you know, decapitating our partners. And I say all that because I wonder what, for me, there, it doesn't seem like there's really an excuse anymore to not have great relationships.
I think the tools that we need to not be perfect versions of ourselves, but be better versions of ourselves, they're more accessible than they've ever been. And I think we can still go a ways in terms of making things more accessible. But I think like, I mean, that, I think that's one of my personal, like, that's what keeps giving me hope, is the fact that people have more tools available for personal transformation than ever before. Because whether you're, you know, here or in Singapore, like, you can, you know, do a search and find either someone who can help you with your anxiety or some practice that could help you with your anxiety, or, you know, just something you can find something that can just help you develop a better mindset. And I don't think we've ever had that in human history. I think within, there have been pockets of culture, you know, like indigenous methods, like, you know, methods in Asia, like in terms of, you know, Vedic practices or Buddhist practices, and but they've been sort of localized. And now that we live in a globalized world and everything's highly interconnected, like, our sort of the wealth of information that we have now is collectively held. And I think to me, like when I see the world always going through its massive ups and downs, it gives me hope that now people have enough tools to help cultivate themselves so that they can expand their own self-love. And I really think like self-love, it's only really real if it starts opening the door to unconditional love to all beings, right? Not perfect unconditional love, because that's a very, very, very high bar. But it starts giving you the understanding that the same way that you struggle in your mind, the way that you've seen that you struggle and that you've developed compassion for yourself, you know that other people have also struggled. And it sort of sparks that compassion for others. And I think, you know, real self-love, it starts giving you that compassion for yourself and for other people.
Yeah, without it. I love how you said that. That like without that, it has to transcend to other beings.
Totally.
That would totally be its like natural process.
Yeah.
You know, and probably on some level, like connection to all things, God, whatever we might want to call it, you all of a sudden start to, it's like when someone does psilocybin, you know, and then they feel really connected to everything. And then they think that the way to be connected to everything is psilocybin, rather than psilocybin activates something that's already within you.
And you look at a lot of different sort of mystical traditions or religious traditions, and there are periods where, you know, it's the prophet or messiah, whatever you want to call it. You know, there's periods of solitude. Mm-hmm. Where like people spend time by themselves and then they come out of that solitude and realize how interconnected everything is and how valuable it is to live from a place of service, to be helping other people who are suffering or who suffered like how you did. And I think that's something that it's easy to forget nowadays when, you know, we're so algorithm oriented and we know that the algorithm, like, you know, people prefer to hear things that are just about you and not necessarily taking any responsibility over your actions, but just like how other people, you know, like what they've done to you and, you know, the narcissist that you need to get away from or the boundaries that you need to make. But ultimately, your happiness is coming from your mindset, and you need to realize that that perception and that reaction is happening in your own mind. So it's healthy to develop boundaries. It's healthy to make sure to not be around super toxic people that are abusive. But at the same time, your happiness is self-created and you have to take ownership over that.
Yeah. And then make the choices that curate what you want to create. Yeah. I'm curious, in writing this, who were you thinking of?
That's a really good question. I think I thought a lot about my family. I thought a lot about the good examples that I've had where I looked at the relationships that I know, you know, people who've been married for like 40 years, like my parents, my wife's parents. I have this one meditation teacher, him and his wife have been together forever, and he's like in his mid 70s. And I thought about them and like the way they sort of, I noticed in all those relationships, especially the really long-term ones, there is a sense of individuality that's quite powerful in the togetherness, if that makes sense, where like they're individuals, like they have very different likes and dislikes, and they still live in this home together, like literally like a, you know, metaphorical home and a physical home, but they're living totally separate lives that choose to live side by side, but they're unique lives. And I think sometimes when we think about long-term relationships, it feels like we need to become twins, like you and your wife, but you don't. Actually, it's much more fun for you to be very different.
Yeah, it's way more attractive to be in a relationship with someone who's not you. Unless you're a narcissist, then it's great to be in a relationship with someone who is you. For the people listening, watching, who is this book for? Like when you wrote it, that part too, like what, you know, who would this really resonate with?
I think it's really like the same sort of rules and ideas that can help a relationship be harmonious, like an intimate relationship. Those same lessons apply for anyone that you're in proximity to. So when you think about like what we said earlier, like when you're in proximity to anyone, whether that's your family or you're living with, you know, living with family members, living with a roommate, living with a best friend, or living with your partner, these people are going to see the best of you. They're going to see the worst of you. You're going to have arguments with them. You're going to have tough moments and great moments. So it's important to just understand that there are ways to improve your emotional skill set so that you can show up better and do your part in overcoming those tough moments. And so I think about, you know, how to love better. It's really for anybody that's in relationship to anyone.
I love that. And for people to recognize, like, if you want to be better at love, better at relating, the learning never, unfortunately and fortunately, never stops. And I always think, like, the greatest transition you have to make in learning is going from I'm learning this because there's something wrong with me versus I'm learning this because there's more opportunity for me, you know, and it's such a different way to relate. You have, I was reading when I was looking at your book and I read that quote, everyone enters relationship with imperfections and negative patterns that block the flow of love. But when you embrace growth, the new harmony within you will flow into your relationship. Yeah, it's almost like if we orient to love and self from that place of non-judgmental curiosity, then how can that not transcend?
Totally. I feel like nowadays, especially after this wellness movement, the self-love movement, I think what comes next is just fortifying and enhancing our growth-oriented relationships. I think it's all about being growth-oriented. And those are the relationships, I think, you know, that are really going to thrive, where you're really going to have happiness, because you know that change is bound to happen. So you might as well take the reins on that and evolve in ways that help you show up better in your relationship.
Beautiful. Man, thanks so much. I'm so grateful that we get to have another conversation about love and relating and with your insights that I know have been hard-earned over the years in the most beautiful ways. Like to sit through a 45-day meditation, you're in a very, 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 very small percentage of the human population.
And yeah, there's probably not that many of us. Yeah, I don't even know what number I would throw out it, but probably even in the United States, maybe like a group of 500 or so, if at that.
Isn't that wild? Out of what, just 400 million or whatever it is in the US? That's amazing.
But I like exploring the universe, man. It's the best vehicle. You just got to close your eyes.
Yeah, brother, I appreciate it. I appreciate all the learnings that you've taken from your life and love and your meditations and just how, you know, you went from writing as young Pueblo to then teaching and writing as you through the vehicle of young Pueblo. So I've got to be part of that evolution in our podcast conversations.
I'm grateful for that, man. I feel like our conversations are a real record of, you know, how everything has evolved since like what, 2018 or something like that. So
I think the first one we did, I remember where I was sitting. I think it was at the beginning of COVID actually. Cause I was in Whistler. But
we had one right before COVID for sure.
Yeah. Yes, actually it was because rented a house there. And then we had done an interview because I remember where I was sitting. And then our next one, I would think I was in Tofino. And then this one, I'm back in Calgary where I grew up. So
Yeah, man.
I'm so excited for everyone to get their hands on this book. Tell everyone where they can get it, which I'm guessing is everywhere. Yeah. But also where to find more of you.
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram. You can find me at Young Pueblo. Also my Substack is where I share longer articles. So like the Instagram, you can get a lot of the sort of more minimalistic ideas that I'm putting out there. And then the Substack has the longer articles where I get to go much deeper. And if you want the really deep stuff, it's all in the books. So you can get How to Love Better on Amazon, in bookstores, you know, and anywhere online.
Awesome, man. Thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. I really appreciate you, man.